Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Coming up in this edition of TV Black Box, the race against time to retrieve vital ratings data before it's deleted. Should creative decisions be made based on the diversity of the production and on-air team? And which group of celebrities are turning on each other, all because only one of them got the Twitter blue tick? Welcome to the podcast where people in the TV industry get their news.
This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
We're back! Did you miss us, my lovelies? Well, I hope you did, because we've got a huge edition of TV Black Box for you today, and I've got some really interesting people joining me on this week's edition. First up, we have the very lovely Sarah Monahan. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning, or good evening, or whatever time it is where everybody is.
You sound like The Truman Show. Good morning, good evening, good night. We have the less slightly lovely, but still lovely nonetheless, Stephen Brooke. Hello, Brookie.
Hello, Robert McKnight. How are you?
Mate, I feel like it's been ages since we last conversed.
Oh, look, it probably has. I think I've been on holidays and got a new job. So
yes.
And then we had our school holiday hiatus.
Yes, which was unplanned. And people have been saying, is everything all right? Is the podcast okay? Well, basically, I got caught up doing our Eye on Big Brother podcast video cast, which was just a mammoth effort and huge. And Mog was supposed to fill in and got sick. So it all just sort of fell apart. But you know what? It's free. So, you know, we're back anyway. Also joining me tonight in a little bit of fill in for the fill out. I don't know what I'm trying to say there. But
you're saying special guest star.
Yeah, thank you. Is David Robinson from the Ben Robin Robbo Show. Hello, Robbo.
I actually really liked Brookie's intro better than yours, Robert. Yes, I prefer a special guest star, kind of like Heather Locklear on Melrose Place.
Exactly like yes. Heather.
Yes, thank you very much. Lovely to be here, guys. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you.
I also noticed we have matching haircuts.
Oh, yeah. You do.
Oh, if I can put mine down a little bit.
If you want to see what that looks like, just watch the Ben Robin Robert Show Monday to Thursday at 1 p.m. and you can see what Sarah's talking about. But, hey, I'm just so thrilled to have this next lady with us. It's none other than your television star, Evie Jones, is in the house. Hello, Evie.
Woo. Hi. That's a good introduction. I'll take it.
I gave you a slightly great better one than Robbo.
Well, look. Everyone don't hate me.
Oh, we don't hate you. We love you. In fact, I love this panel. Mog and Ben better watch out. That's all I'm saying. let's see if they're actually listening to this podcast, because that will come back to bite me on the ass. You know what? There is a lot to talk about in the world of television, so let's get into the news items of the week. And it's been an unsettling week for TV executives, with no ratings data being available since Wednesday last week. As confirmed by TV Black Box, Oztam and Nielsen have been dealing with a ransomware attack, which has seen them lose access to their service. Now, in a new twist, TV Black Box can reveal the data stored on each box in each home is only kept for 7 days. That means that unless Oztam can retrieve the data, last Tuesday's information will be gone forever. But in an update this afternoon, as we record the TV Black Box podcast, Oztam and Nielsen are saying that they have successfully retrieved the data, and it will be made available on Wednesday. So we look forward to seeing that. Brookie, no ratings in the world of TV is a very scary idea.
Yes, and there's more data available than ever before. And as we know, media buyers like to know what's being watched, because they have given advertisers recommendations about what programs they should be putting their dollars into. This sounds like a temporary blip, and if that data had been lost, the industry would have had to have dealt with it. There was a bit of a crossover, though, that made it a particularly bad time, the ending of several big programs and the start of a whole new slate of other programs. Advertisers, I guess, fairly would have known by this stage what programs they really wanted to advertise in and would have, I think, ultimately regarded this as little more than a blip, even if the data had been lost.
Yeah, look, you can imagine why Seven would be a bit upset. They look set to win the demos last week up against Nine. And while for advertisers, the finale of Big Brother isn't so much a big point, they'd be more interested in knowing how Farmer Wants a Wife has gone, because that is where they're now putting their money. But it gives Seven bragging rights. Evie, this is a bad time for Seven not to have that powerful PR punch.
Of course, the Big Brother finale, not knowing what the ratings were for that, is a huge loss and an empty hole. Like, what do you do if you can't show off your numbers?
The thing that gets me, Sarah, is having been in that position of 8:58 every morning, checking the Oztam Raw numbers and then waiting for the reports to be generated, I would be sweating over those numbers. And executives don't know how to feel about themselves until they see those numbers. Am I a worthwhile human being? Did I do well in the ratings yesterday? Well, I don't know until I see those numbers. I don't know if I'm worthy of being alive until I see those numbers. You would have seen that when Hey Dad was on. You always wanted the numbers coming through, didn't you?
Well, I mean, now they can just make it up and say, well, we're the most popular people on Twitter, so therefore we win.
Indeed.
But if they do need some cybersecurity, my husband does work for a company that can make sure they don't get hacked again. Just saying.
Oztam, if you're listening, and we know you are, give Sarah Monahan a call. She'll sort you out and not allow these attackers to get you again. And I truly hope the information has been retrieved successfully. I'm a bit surprised, though, Robbo, that the information is usually these reports are generated daily. So if they've retrieved the information from last Tuesday, why it's not out by the time of recording on Monday night, that surprises me.
Because are you suggesting that maybe there's been a little bit of fuzzing of the truth? Do you think that you're
I'm
right?
I'm not implying anything.
I think that's a very good point. It's so long ago, and this is almost like having a coal-fired power station without having coal. but that's what it is with the TV industry. It just can't survive. It can't function properly because everyone from as you
without
said,
validation.
That's right.
Yeah, you're just flying blindly, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's so like everyone an Instagram from executives, model.
Everyone from executives to advertisers, everyone, publicity. They just don't know what to do if they don't have the numbers. So it's a tough world out there.
But the worst
it's like being on Instagram and when you don't look at your insights, it's like you almost don't care what people see.
Very true.
You're doing it for fun. What?
The worst thing for Seven, though, is even if they do get the data and they release those reports, the world has moved on. Big Brother seems like a long-distant memory now, and so they've missed that opportunity. Well, look, talking of ratings, we're past the halfway mark of the ratings year, and some shows have plenty to crow about. While Nine News Sydney has claimed a year after hitting the magic 21 weeks, which marks 10 straight years in the top spot, Seven News has now come out claiming the national win. In an email to staff, Seven News boss Craig McPherson said Seven News is on track to again win every ratings week for 5 years in succession. Robbo, there's no doubt Seven News is dominant in Adelaide and Perth, but does a national figure at 6 p.m. mean anything when each news service is local?
Well, that's right, Rob. And as you mentioned, Adelaide and Perth are the ones that always prop up Seven, because those are very, very big Seven towns. Yes, but you know that's the day and age that we're in, isn't it? That whatever
oh,
when
it's
you
all
can
spin.
Get your sorry, Rob.
It's all spin.
Yeah, that's right. And yes, there's all spin, and you'd snap it up. And if there is one way that you can say that you've won, then people will take on. The thing I always love is with the Oz Stereo Network, they call it the number one hit music station, but there is not another hit music station in the market.
They're the only station called Hit.
That's right, but they're the number one hit music station. So there's always been
a bit
of that too.
We are the number one Ben Robin Robbo show.
Yeah, that's right. Those other ones are bastards. But yes.
Brookie, as when we were winning at 9, it used to do my head in when 7 would be touting their 6 p.m. bulletin with Chris Barth as Australia's number one. Chris Barth, and God love her, nice person, was not number one. You know, she was a distant second in Sydney, but claiming number one through a national win when there's different readers in Perth, there's different readers in Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane. It's just BS,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what you know now. There are so many different ways to slice and dice these figures. You can have number one in Sydney, Perth, Melbourne, Brisbane, etc. And I used to live in Perth, and I fully understand Channel 7's dominance there. A new metric that is growing in popularity with 9 is number one on the East Coast, and that's the Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane market. And yes, to be fair, that is where the majority of the population resides and also the advertising dollars. So you've got a very heavy skew in terms of where brands are spending their money in Sydney and Melbourne, because that's where the eyeballs are. A bit extra in Brisbane as well. But then these markets for national advertisers in Perth and Adelaide are really quite small. Of course, if you're a local advertiser, then that's where you want to be putting your dollars, because that's where you're going to be reaching the relevant consumers. So I do think that there is some truth to the fact that this national figure is, in terms of TV advertising, at least in ratings, neither here nor there.
Fair enough. All right, still on news, the ABC is celebrating 10 years of the ABC News Channel. The channel was fully funded out of efficiencies made within news and received no additional funding when it launched. In 2020, year-to-date, News Channel is reaching more than 4 million Australians every week, that's metro and regional, with a metro daytime share of 5.4%. Evie, I must say, I keep the News Channel on now while prepping the Ben Robin Robbo show, and it's actually a really good service. I am surprised the commercial networks haven't jumped on the bandwagon with the 24-hour News Channel.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they even know that it exists, commercial TV. They just do their own thing. But ABC News Channel is the best. And, you know, during the bushfires, I was out of service away from Melbourne, and the only thing I could get was the ABC News 24 hours. And I was so glad, because it's what I'm used to anyway. I think most people don't care what the ABC is doing, because, you know, they're not about ratings and advertising. So I think people just leave them to their own devices, not knowing just how popular it really is.
Yeah, but a 5.4% share in 2020 is a good share to have. You know, SBS, Brookie, only does 6.6 or something like
that. We are being a little unfair to the commercial networks, because we've forgotten that they actually did have a 24-hour news service, which was called Sky News Australia. So 7 and 9 both had quite substantial shares in that back in the day. And they...
I meant on free-to-air.
Yeah, well, Sky, you can get on free-to-air in quite a few country areas now, and there's talk about it getting its own digital...
True. And on YouTube.
And talk about it getting its own digital channel. They did sell out of that arrangement quite a few years ago, and clearly they produce a lot of content that is not going to make their 6 p.m. flagship bulletins, and that's more likely to go up online. Whether in this day and age you would want to spend the time, effort and money to establish another linear TV service as a news channel, or just stick it all up online on demand, I think is probably going to be the future for these different news services, which are still in competition, let's not forget, with each other, and still find their news hours very lucrative for them, because they're quite often the top rating program, especially this year, of the entire weekly schedule.
And you don't want that many news channels, because living in a place that has 18 non-stop 24-hour news channels, they're just going to have to make shit up eventually to compete with each other.
Well,
Australia's nice and quiet. You don't need that much news.
Sarah. We don't have that much news. And now, notice the difference this year, when there is actually news to report that matters, how audiences have flocked in to watch it. You're quite right about making stuff up, although they're a bit more sophisticated by that, and they just call them panel shows, where instead of sending crews out, you can just have...
it's just opinions.
It's a lot cheaper to stick a whole bunch of people behind a desk who will shout at each other than sending crews out to get the stories.
As a co-host of one of those panel shows, I won't take any.
Rob, we can go through your budgets if you want, but we probably have another segment to go on to.
My point being, though, that in this age of content delivery and trying to get audiences to free-to-air television, I am surprised that 7, 9 or 10, let me be very specific, haven't looked at the 24-hour news channel model, because they're essentially doing it. Whenever there's a press conference, they're taking it live online anyway. And when you think about it, they're already delivering so many hours of news on the stations anyway. They do a 5 news. Take 9. They do a 5 a.m. news service. They've got Today Show from 5:30 till 9, 10-ish. They've got Today Extra from 9, 10 until 11 or 11:30. 11:30, sorry. Then they've got Morning News until midday. They used to have the 3 p.m. news, 9 News Now, but I think that's gone for good. And so my point being is that they've got so much news anyway. They've got the resources. Taking live press conferences is half of what a news channel is, and politicians are doing press conferences every day. So I don't know that it would be that hard to do, and I'm just surprised that they're not trying to build an audience to transfer online, which presumably Sky News is going to have to do at one point or another, because Foxtel will disappear eventually. So what is the future of Sky News? Will it become an online platform? And then, Brookie, does its commentators fit an online platform?
Yes, I wonder. You're right, there's a lot of news on all networks. If you then set up a 24-hour news channel, are you going to take away, are you going to rob your main channel audiences from all those different news bulletins and then put on different types of programming? I think that the commercial free-to-air networks probably have looked at that model, because let's face it, they've got a lot of extra digital channels now. Most have got between 3 or 4. I reckon they've probably looked at it and rejected it as not being able to make the figures work, or worried it's going to rob their flagship channels, which, as you pointed out, have got quite a lot of news bulletins on them.
Although I love the way the ABC does it, you know, like being up in Queensland during daylight savings, ABC News comes into Queensland live on the ABC News channel and is delayed on the main channel so that it matches up with what time it's meant to go to air. And that's a really good service and gives me a reason to go to ABC News 24 and gives me a reason to watch the ABC, because I can watch content live. All right, let's move on. Well, the sun continues to rise at 7 with news. The network has signed a new deal with David Koch, which will see him continue as the host of Sunrise for another 2 years. While his workload has been reduced to 4 days a week since his last contract negotiation, The Australian reports there was no pay rise as part of this new deal. Sarah, you'd have to say a smart move by 7 to keep Koch in the chair.
Sure. I mean, people like him, right?
Well, Sunrise is dominant number one. If it ain't broke, you don't fix it, right?
Yeah, so keep him there. I mean, just don't invite any international guests that don't want any bad press.
Yeah.
Oh.
Dude, seriously, the only time I ever hear bad things about people is when they go on that show and he, tweets about them.
Well, live TV is a funny thing, and these celebrities sometimes come on not knowing what country they're in, let alone
go on so many other channels, and they're just lovely. So,
well, hang on, is that because he calls out their bullshit? You know, like, remember when Heath Ledger was on Sunrise and he sat there peeling an orange?
Yes.
And Koshy called him out because he was being arrogant and rude. And, you know, God rest his soul, if you believe in God. But, yes.
He did that through an entire interview with On Enough Rope with Andrew Denton. His interviews were always so exquisitely awkward.
Did he do that with
awkward.
Andrew Denton as well? Because he definitely did it on Sunrise.
Maybe that was like his shtick.
Yeah, he didn't peel an orange, but he may as well have. He was just twitching in the chair the entire time and touching him, you know, like...
Touching himself?
He's touching himself.
In the nicest possible way.
Constantly preening and, yeah, he was on drugs. Like, you could tell there was something going on. So I wouldn't have expected anything more. But I think with Koshy, you've got to keep him on a winning formula because we've seen what happened on today when they got rid of Carl. So, you know, the execs
are not going to do that again.
Yeah, they're going to be like, let's learn lessons.
And for as great,
to do them.
As great as the chemistry is between Carl and Ali, they've got a long way to go at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
I do think the seven on-air team, not just the main presenters, but all the other side presenters, if you like, the team is a lot more comfortable on Sunrise than it appears to be on today. Koshy is 64. He's always maintained other interests. His latest one is that Oz Biz digital channel that he set up with former Sky Business exec Kylie Merritt, and he's got his own business-to-business publication. So a very hard worker. I do think he makes it look easy. It's funny, isn't it? And we've talked about this so many times. Sunrise is completely dominant, but we spend most of our time talking about the Today Show. I've never quite worked out why.
Because Sunrise being number one is the same old story.
Of stability, isn't it? And I think he's a very important part of that stability. And as you've made out, you've said before, we all know what will happen when Koshy goes. The succession planning is already there and is in evidence on the days that he is not on Sunrise because the team is in place and sails on without him.
Yeah.
But does Sunrise work though? I want to raise this with everyone here. Obviously, with all of the hoo-ha, brouhaha of Carl leaving, did that not give Sunrise a free kick? Because really, Sunrise hasn't changed that much in a long time, in a very long time. There's been no massive innovations there. So I think that when Today had Carl and then Deb and then George and all of that imploded, it kind of just gave a very, 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 very free big kick to Sunrise without any having to ever have any innovation.
Absolutely.
They didn't have to do anything for it.
Well, you look at how close Today got to beating Sunrise. Well, they did beat Sunrise. They
that's
beat
right.
them in the five cap cities in 20... I want to say 14, but I know I'm wrong. It was 2014, I think, 2015. I can't remember.
But you're right, though. Yes.
But they actually won, and seven went to challenge it in court, and nine rolled over. When it was a five-cap city win, but Sunrise turned around and said, no, but we're counting nationals now. You know, that's not a yardstick we use when measuring who wins and loses the year. But Sunrise ambushed nine and claimed that. So in my view, that year, Today actually won.
Yeah.
Well, so what happened?
You are right, Rob, and that gets back to my earlier point about advertising revenue, because whilst there are more eyeballs in rural and regional areas, the importance, again, of the advertising revenue means that five-cap cities is what counts.
Absolutely. But Sunrise have held on. They've come back stronger and stronger, and all credit to them. And yes, Brookie, the only reason we don't talk about it every week is because it's the same story every week, and it's more interesting to see who's battling it out for number two now, because there's movement there with ABC News Breakfast coming up and giving the Today a bit of a kicking. And we still think ABC News will end up in the number two spot, and that will certainly be a story. Okay, social media has been in uproar after Guy Sebastian's brother, Chris, won The Voice on Channel 9. While the winner was decided by a public vote, viewers were quick to say Chris had an unfair advantage by being the brother of one of the judges. Robbo, what do you reckon? Is this completely unfair?
Well, look, yes. The short answer, yes. Because you've got to be fair. Remember, like, we've talked about this on the Ben, Rob and Robbo show, and that was that, you know, there are very basic T's and C's that say that people who, if you're related to someone, then they can't be part of it. It's just not the right place to have your brother being a judge and you winning it. You know, there are plenty of other ways to get ahead, I'm assuming, if you're Guy Sebastian's brother. This just feels a bit icky to me. I've got to say that.
I mean, he could have gone on The Masked Singer, right?
That's right.
Although he's not a celebrity.
No, because nobody would have known who he was. He could not have done The Masked Singer. Go and watch, and you can see it online, his blind audition. It is clear that Guy Sebastian instantly knows who it is.
Oh, really?
boy, yeah, he gives this smile of recognition, and you see his name, so the viewers see his name and put two and two together. It's actually a really lovely moment. But guess what? Boy George is the first person to turn around, and then Guy does. Kelly is incredibly enthusiastic, and then Delta. And I tell you what, they had basically all whizzed round before the first chorus really got going. So the guy can clearly see.
No one's disputing that, Brookie. No one is disputing that.
No, but they are.
Didn't he audition for the very first season? So correct. On the technicality, was Guy on the, he mustn't have been.
No,
I don't remember who was
then.
The judges. So on a technicality, he's come back kind of as an all-star.
Yeah, that's true. But at the end of the day, Brookie just said it. Guy realised who it was straight away. Delta knows him. The name Sebastian, he has an unfair advantage from the point of view that Guy's fans are going to vote for Chris because they love Guy, they want to support Guy, and therefore support his brother. It doesn't pass the pub test, does it?
I don't know. They didn't. Like, I've watched The Voice where they've recognised voices before, and you can tell they know who the singer is. I know it's not, but what's the difference between their brother or their best friend?
Because usually when...
But are you going to tell a guy he can't go on a TV show just because his brother's already famous?
Yes. If you went to any competition on television or any competition...
If he's a judge, if the family member is a judge...
specifically state that if you know anyone who works on the production, you cannot be part of this. This is a singing competition. He knows the bloody judge.
But are there any other shows he could have gone on? Because obviously he can't go on the market.
Issue there. The issue
is a small country.
On this show where his brother is a judge.
Australia is a small country. These conflicts come up all the time.
Way too incestuous.
Look at MasterChef. Who was the contestant who'd worked at the restaurant that one of the judges had run? Et cetera, et cetera. Another one was the best friend of another of the judges.
Best friend and brothers are the same thing.
I would have more of a problem if this had been concealed to everyone. It clearly was not. And look, who decided the winner? The voting public.
Who are all
fans he didn't use
Guy
his mother's
Sebastian.
Maiden name or something.
Well, they're not all fans of Guy Sebastian because Guy Sebastian's... candidates, which did not include his brother,
did not win.
Who would Guy more prefer to win? His protege on The Voice or his brother? Come on,
well,
people.
His brother didn't choose him to be his mentor.
Yeah,
so
I reckon he would have liked his contestant to win.
Yeah. I mean, you think brothers are all close. Look at Ollie Murs. His brother no longer speaks with him.
But it's
in Britain,
the point.
No, get this. Because in Britain, Ollie Murs decided to go on The X Factor rather than go to his twin brother's wedding.
No.
Well, that worked out for Ollie, so come on, man.
So now you're blaming the brother for being annoyed that
he should have moved the wedding. This is television. Takes precedence.
I think it would have been a lot worse had Chris chosen Guy as his mentor. And then we could really be up in arms about something.
No, you know what? I've been on the fence.
Guy had won.
I've got to say, I've been on the fence on this one for a long time. You guys have convinced me it was wrong and inappropriate. So all your arguments have now made me think this was a bullshit move by Nine. They should never have allowed it to happen. And they've robbed those other three contestants of a shot of winning because the moment they're up against Guy Sebastian's brother, it's over, Red Rover. You don't have a chance in hell.
Baloney. Not everyone who watches that show is a huge fan of Guy Sebastian, are they? The whole format is designed to engender rivalry between judges, isn't it?
And it's always the people who don't win who end up with a recording contract. It's always number two and number three who end up with a really good deal, and whoever wins
One
gets
Direction
locked into some shitty contract.
Yes, Sarah.
Still,
One Direction did not win the X Factor.
It's still inappropriate. They're brothers.
Why is it inappropriate?
Well, they're not having sex together, you know.
Because he's judging a competition of which his brother is in.
No, hold on. The viewers are the ones who determine the winner.
Not initially. Only at
the
end. The
winner. There's only one winner. Well, that is the winner.
I think he got through on his
I'm not saying he's not talented
every time.
I'm not saying
I think
he's
he got
talented.
Through every time on his.
It's just inappropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think so. Not at all. We live in a very small country.
It's
if we
small.
Just start putting that out there, you know, that, you know, this and that can't, you can't.
Why don't we take
with...
a vote, Rob, since you're so keen on judging
no votes
and voting?
I leave my vote.
We're one of
10.
Five. Yeah.
Right. All right. Let's move on.
Haven't you got a show to plug, Rob? Let's move on.
It's funny you mention that, because before we move on, I just want to make mention that our very own Ben Rob and Robbo show hit a big milestone during our little two-week break, hitting the big 50. Streaming live every Monday to Thursday at 1 p.m, the show can now boast over 70,000 views per week through Ticker TV and our various social media platforms. Robbo, it's been a big few weeks and we've been doing double shifts. I think I'm a bit too excited to enjoy the moment.
I think you're right there too,
exhausted,
Rob, because when I was coming out to do this show tonight, I was like, oh, bloody hell, I'm getting deja vu here. I'm used to coming out to the studio three times a week. It's a wonderful achievement, I think, and not to be too...
if we do say so ourselves.
Yeah, but I was going to say that, not to be too, interrupt, but when you think about it, what we try to create here is something that hasn't really been done before in this space, and, you know, we have a lot of fun, and Ben's an idiot, and Rob's an idiot. Sorry. Oh, bloody hell, I forgot we were recording. No, I love them both. That was just a little joke there. We have a lot of fun. I think it's a good show. And again, I just want to say the Ben Robin Robbo show live Monday to Thursday, 1 p.m.
And Brookie, you should check it out one day.
Yeah, so Brookie, it's 1 p.m. Monday to Thursday. You can catch
and
up on
demand,
the social media.
Just go to the Facebook page at BRR Show.
I would love to check it out. What is it exactly?
Just go to facebook.com/BRRShow and you can see the show on demand anytime you like, Brookie. I look forward to the day that you watch it. Brookie doesn't watch anything he doesn't appear in these days. That's his new rule.
I know. I'm like Elle McPherson. She never did anything she'd never read. Or maybe that was Kylie. Yeah.
All right. Now it's time for Hatchets and Dispatches with Sarah.
Thanks, Rob. And Channel 10 has pulled the plug on its Supercars coverage after deciding to walk away from the event. Motoring publication Auto Action recently reported a new deal would see 7 broadcast live, a minimum of 1 race per round. Foxtel will remain as the primary broadcaster with full access to all races and practice sessions. The federal government has announced $10 million in funding for Foxtel to continue its support of coverage of women's, niche and underrepresented sports. The $10 million in additional funding over 2 years comes at a crucial time for women's and underrepresented sports as they navigate the impact of COVID-19 and look toward competition restarts. It's an underrepresented sport.
Like Quidditch.
Beyond International has announced Kate Llewellyn Jones as CEO of its international distribution division. TV Tonight reports Llewellyn Jones will oversee the merger of the Beyond Distribution business with its recent acquisition, TCB Media Rights. And Seven has secured Australian rights to produce a local version of the high-energy competition series Ultimate Tag. The format is based on the classic schoolyard game of tag and features teams of male and female contestants moving through highly elaborate indoor obstacle courses while professional taggers attempt to chase them down. And that is this week's Hatches and Dispatches.
Yes, Sarah, I agree with what you said under your breath. There's also on Netflix, I think it is, The Floor is Lava. You know, like...
That's a fantastic show.
I saw a meme on Twitter this week. Someone was talking about The Lava Show and they were comparing it to American healthcare.
Well, anyway, okay, that's a story for another time. Thank you, Sarah. Yeah. Coming up, should diversity play a role in the commissioning of new television projects? And which group of celebrities have turned on each other after someone got the Twitter blue tick? That's coming up when we open the TV Black Vault. That's coming up shortly.
That wasn't bad.
It was terrible, Robbo, and it is terrible every week. And don't encourage him.
I love it.
We'll be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
These are real confessions.
Saying I'd wanted to kill my mother since I was 8 years old.
From real serial killers.
We've just got to be violent.
Best-selling true crime author Amanda Howlett doesn't just talk about their crimes. She talks directly to them.
It's all getting a bit much, really.
It's the podcast that goes where others fear to tread. Monsters Who Murder. Serial Killer Confessions. Subscribe now in your favorite podcast feed.
I included that promo just for you, Brookie.
I don't know if I should confess this, but occasionally I've just thought, if I turn to crime, could I get a slot on that podcast promo? Because I love it so much.
But Brookie, if you were on it, would you listen to it?
Well, I have a full-time job now, so...
Okay. If we have you as a guest on the Ben Robin Robbo show, will you watch that too?
How many words a day?
Time poor, fella.
How many words a day do you write? Like 1,500?
No. A little bit less. Never mind. It's the quality, not the quantity.
Of course, absolutely.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
All right. Now. It's been a while since we've had one of these. It's time for our big topic of the week. And for that, we go to Brookie.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Diversity or lack of it has been a hot topic, both here and overseas. Locally, there's been criticism of the newsroom in SBS with accusations of bullying and racism and Indigenous staff leaving the network. Also, lots of criticism of the multicultural broadcaster's white executive team. Former SBS boss Michael Abid, Egyptian-born, came out and said it didn't matter who the executives were and that race was no barrier to making multicultural programs. And despite vocal staff complaints, the actual staff satisfaction ratings at SBS are very high. But it is hard for Indigenous people and people from various ethnic backgrounds to break into the industry. And yes, we are an all-white panel, we have to acknowledge. But let's look at what's happening overseas. Viacom CBS, who own the 10 network locally, have just announced a range of initiatives. They've got a new policy, no diversity, no commission, that is operating in the UK, and they're appointing various executives to monitor diversity amongst their production and on-air talent, and looking at programs that will mentor people from different ethnic backgrounds through the company. Said Maria Kiriakou, who's president Viacom CBS Networks UK and Australia, and I'll just quote her at length because it's worth it, putting her point of view across. Society is now at an inflection point on the issue of systemic racism, and as individuals, as a company, we all have a part to play in righting centuries of wrongs. For too long, the TV industry has been a relative closed shop. And if we are to be of continued relevance to the audiences that we serve, then this must change. She says diversity and inclusion is a core company value. Yet hearing from our employees over the course of the past few weeks, we know that we can and we must do more to increase representation at all levels. So, Sarah, do you think she is right? TV is still a relatively closed shop.
I mean, I guess it depends on what country you're in, because other countries have different, you know, like you look at America, they've got BET, they've got Univision, they've got like all the different networks that are just for people who are not of a white background, and they don't care whether they hire white people or not. And in the US, you've got SAG, which mandates that you hire a certain amount of people of other ethnicities or colors or cultures. I always think that, yes, it's great that we include people, but I think at the same time, you should get your job based on merit, not just on being a token.
Well, and I think this is the great conflict, isn't it? Because I don't see how you can square that circle and reconcile those two competing ambitions. I'm struggling to work out how you can promote on merit whilst at the same time encourage diversity within the industry. Evie, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, no, we just simply don't. I don't know. I don't want to. I think we do need a lot of diversity, but do we have it?
Well, can you force people to do it? Because that's the thing, right? If you don't have an Asian person that wants the job, are you going to go and force an Asian person to take the job just to get your quota in? I mean, what if they're not interested in that? I mean, if people want to do it, then please let them do the job. But if people aren't interested, you can't force a certain number to do a profession just because it makes it look better that you have the numbers.
Well, Evie, let's talk about a show you know well, Gogglebox, which seems to have had no problems in showcasing a large, diverse cast. And, I mean, some of them are the real stars of the show, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that they're all quite quintessentially Australian, not diverse.
That's an interesting point.
I just think that had they really wanted to be diverse, there would have been some real differences. Everyone pretty much is the same on Gogglebox. We all pretty much agree with the same thing. 9 out of 10 people say the same thing every time. They have to choose from the edit which one goes to air for that particular scene. So even though the
people are different, you're saying the views and their attitudes to the programs you're watching... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they often have the same reaction.
Yeah. I think the diversity there was not very big at all.
Despite the ethnic diversity, the personality traits were the same.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got the Sri Lankan family and then the Greeks and the Vietnamese, but they're all really Australian, really Australian. So the only diversity in that show, as far as I'm concerned, was Mick and Di, the old couple who disagreed with everyone. Everything they liked, no one else liked. Everything they hated, we all liked.
Well, and the other question is, are you looking for cultural and racial diversity or are you looking for visual diversity? Because a lot of places, people are, they're black, they're Asian, like their ethnicity is different, but they are Australian or they are American. But, you know, like, you have places where you give, like, at colleges, they give cultural diversity scholarships, and there was a big brouhaha here because there was people from South Africa who had gotten a scholarship in the U.S. to Michigan University because they were African-American, because they were from South Africa. And then the school worked out that they were white, and they took the college scholarship away from them. And it's like, they are legit, they have 2 passports, they are actually African, that is a different culture, but because they were technically light-skinned, they were not considered culturally different. And I'm like, that is absolutely culturally different because you are from a different culture, you're from a different country. What you are looking for is visual diversity because you don't care if someone was raised in the same place as everyone else as long as they look different. And to me, they are 2 entirely different concepts that people seem to confuse as one.
I agree, Sarah, with that 100%. That, like, just that one example, the show that I was on looked visually diverse. And that's it.
Yeah,
I'll tell you where the disagreements on Gogglebox were. They were with that dad Matt and his daughters.
Yeah,
that's where
that wasn't a diversity thing, though. That was an age thing. Yeah. It was a dad and daughter thing.
Rob, is the industry here or overseas too white? Do you think there are real barriers to entry from people from different races?
Yeah, there probably are, to be honest. You think about a lot of people that work in the industry and it's predominantly white. So that's a given. The thing that scares me about what they're doing over in the UK is saying we will not commission anything unless it's racially diverse or, you know, has the diversity. And I think about that and, well, what if you're missing a great show produced by some white woman who has this amazing story to tell that's a deeply personal story? And because it's her story, she's going to cast a young white woman in the role. You know, she's trying to employ people to help tell that story. Now, I'm all for trying to get more diversity behind camera and in front of the camera. And I take your point, Evie, about the personality differences, but it is actually a great stride to see what's happening on Gogglebox with a different look, even if it is that, because Australians are looking at that and not even flinching. And so that is a great message to send to executives around the country that this is okay. You can have a racially diverse cast and it's okay. I get scared when we say you must have A, B or C to be commissioned. That scares me. Give incentives, by all means. I don't care if the government puts up money to make it more affordable to put people of ethnic diversities into the chair, into roles, or, you know, subsequently, if the government pays for additional production roles to make sure we can assign minorities into these roles or minorities within this country into roles, no problem with that at all.
There seems to be a problematic default to Anglo-Saxon, and we can see that in so many reality programs, sure, in the casting. I don't even know which ones we want to single out, but, and I might be wrong, but Bachelor in Paradise seems to be fairly white to me.
But maybe other people are smart enough not to be an idiot on a reality show, and they're like, my mom would kill me if I went on that show and I would, like, degrade my entire nationality, so I'm not going to do it.
Big Brother seemed to buy, you know, definitely from the halfway mark, seemed to get wider and wider as the weeks progressed. Although MasterChef, there was quite a famous photo now of the Asian cast members who lasted the distance. And wasn't it great recently where on The Voice, Chris Sebastian won, you know, an Australian Malaysian. I just thought that was a really excellent thing to see.
Which I've got no problem with the ethnicity. I just have a problem with the nepotism.
And I think Chris's brother won a really good
competition. Yeah. I mean, it definitely did. Actually,
did Chris win or did Guy win? I think Guy's now won two singing competitions just quietly.
Yes. Yes. Well, technically no, but yes, he'll take it.
I think that we're paying for the mistakes that have been made for the past 60 years of television, and that is that there hasn't been a great diversity. So for the government or for people to say that there needs to be an element of, you know, in lack of another word, I don't mean this in this way, but in ticking the boxes, in involving and encouraging people who aren't white to be part of things, I think is a good idea. And I think the only way that it will happen is if there are these kind of these forced measures, these incentives, mm-hmm, to show that, you know what, there is a great amount of talent out there. Television is far too white in this country, but the only reason it will change is if these things are put in place. So I'm actually all for them.
Yeah, I think incentives but not mandates. That's the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Because you're just setting yourself up for failure should you not fill that particular mandate. It's funny, like you look at something like a Big Brother audition, you know, that say there's a lineup of, and it's just mostly white people auditioning, and you look at something like Australian Idol, and there was a lot. That's when you'd get your New Zealand Maldives, you know, all coming. That was their thing that they could start doing and showing. There's amazing voices in Australia. There's a lot of diversity and multiculturalism in that kind of thing.
It was interesting. I wonder if you could say there was a divide between the talent shows. Australian Idol, right from the word go, showcased really multi-ethnic cast, and the shows that where casting was more important, such as The Block or you know, other programs where the cast was more selected by producers.
But didn't Married at First Sight have a bunch of people from different backgrounds?
Not a bunch. I don't think a bunch.
No. They're different backgrounds with the different Botox clinics they go to.
Yeah, absolutely. We couldn't tell one from the other. Well, I think we've also got to remember that we're a predominantly white nation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's our population. You know, when you look at something like Australia's Next Top Model, there's not going to be as many different nationalities coming through as just a room full of skinny 13-year-old white girls, you know, in this country.
Indeed. And that is the black view from this white panel.
That's the way it is. Yeah, I mean, you look at South Africa, could you imagine the difference in their South Africa's Next Top Model?
Well, one final thing we should ask the panel before we move on is that, you know, Viacom CBS does have a network in Australia, the 10 network. This policy has been announced for the UK. It has been announced for Australia as yet, but Maria Kiriakou is in charge of Australia. Do we think, A, it should, or B, it will be instituted here?
Going to be very different Bachelor if they do.
Back in the day when things like Flipper and stuff were filmed on the Gold Coast, they had to have a certain percentage of ethnicities because they were SAG productions.
Oh, yeah.
Because right. they had to have a certain number. So, like, they say that 17% of actors on television in the US are African American, but only 14% mm-hmm. of the population is African American. So they're actually quite well represented, even though they still are a minority. But it's because when you walk out onto the street, that's what you see when you go to the mall is, you
yes.
know.
Yes, and that's...
In Australia, when they were doing Flipper, they had all of these guys who'd basically come to Australia on like a Navy boat or whatever and had met a girl and stayed and gone AWOL. And one day immigration went out to the set of Flipper, and that's why it got shut down for several weeks because they rounded everybody up and sent them home. And
is they that had
to
true?
Yeah. I used to work for an agent up in Brisbane, and he was like, fuck, I lost all my talent. Wow. We had one guy who was illegal.
Wow, that's a good scoop.
That's hilarious.
Sent them all back to America where they were all charged with desertion. So...
But that's a good note to go out on, Brookie.
We can't top that. Thank you, one and all.
Good big issue, Brookie. All right. Can you hear that? Can you hear that, everyone? Push it open. Push it open. It's time to open the TV Black Vault. And with Ben away this week, I have the duties. I've pulled out the secret envelope and we'll be taking a look at what's inside. All right. And this week, producers of a popular reality TV show are reeling after a rival show has jumped in and managed to do deals with the celebrities they were trying to book. Just how is this rival show getting the jump? Who is the leak? A few oohs and ahs that wouldn't go astray to
beef. Oh, I thought you were going to a thing. Sorry. No. Oh, wow. Yeah. What the? What's what?
Well, can I pretend that I'm on one of those shows so that the other one calls and, like, offers me a job?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. That's what'll happen. Which reality TV star refused to honour publicity requirements because they didn't like what the media was saying about them? It's going to be a very short career if you can't handle a bit of criticism.
Oh, my Lord. Who is that?
It's a guess who don't sue. I can't tell
you. Oh, it's the whole thing you don't find out until we switch off the recording and then Rob tells you. Oh,
well, that's all right. I can wait.
Wait, five. Hang five.
Wow, and it's the battle of the blue tick. Which group of TV stars are angry that one of their posse has been given the blue tick on Twitter, but they haven't? It's enough to turn this once friendly group very, very, very nasty.
Ooh, that sounds like a desperate help.
Yes, no. Well, I have a blue tick, so does Robbo. Sarah
probably
does.
Oh, I don't have a blue tick. No,
I'm blue ticked up, baby.
Oh, Sarah needs one. Sarah's
I only have like 2,000 followers. Nobody cares.
I don't care. It's not the point.
You don't care. You don't care about the blue tick until you've got one, doll.
Exactly. Evie doesn't care. She's on Instagram.
I quit Facebook, so, you know.
Indeed. Facebook all right, well, sucks. That brings us to the end of what was a great TV Black Box. It's so good to be back. I've missed this little show. Brookie, thank you for popping by for a chat.
Rob, it has been a ball. It always is. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, no, I'm glad we could pull you away from your main love, TV Binge Box. Robbo, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Which I noticed we didn't manage to get a plug in for.
I knew that was coming.
Like 5,000 to 1 in terms of Ben, Rob and Robbo and TV Binge Box, which I'm delighted to say has nearly 1,000 followers on the TV Binge Box podcast gang Facebook page.
Awesome.
Do sign up if you can.
So quickly, we'll let everyone know the details of TV Binge Box if you watch the Ben Robin Robbo show tomorrow.
It'll be in our ticket tomorrow. Brookie, no, TV Binge Box is a great show,
yes.
And the Facebook page is going gangbusters, so make sure you check that out. Robbo, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
And I don't think I know where you'll be tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Where will you be?
I'll be actually on the Ben Robin Robbo show. live from Monday to Thursday, 1 o'clock. You can find us in all your lovely social media feeds, and tomorrow we'll give you a very special code word where you could win a brand new car thanks to Brookie at TV Binge Box.
You may not win a car. Sarah, thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you. I'll spend the rest of the day lounging around on my yacht being a good trophy wife.
Good girl.
What a role to have. It's the role of a lifetime, and she does it very, very well. Evie, thank you so much for being with us and coming to play.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. Always enjoying it.
Oh, we love having you here. Don't forget to go to tvblackbox.com.au for all the latest news on the TV industry. It's where people in the industry get their news. We'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.